We are back in Luke's Gospel this week. We took a bit of a break last week and headed over to Philippians, but we are back where we were when Phil left and went on holidays. And we are moving into this portion of the Gospel that we refer to as the travel narrative. It spans the whole length of Jesus' last journey to Jerusalem, a journey that would ultimately end with his crucifixion. This whole part of Luke's Gospel is heavy with Jesus' teaching, and particularly with parables, one of his favorite ways to teach. There are 29 parables in all of Luke's Gospel, and Luke tells us that Jesus told 24 of them to his disciples while they were on this journey. It was intense teaching time for them. The parable we've read together this morning is the first of that long series of 24 that they got to hear while they were traveling with Jesus. One of my favorite teachers on parables is a man named Robert Farrar Capon. Capon comes at parables a little bit differently. He divides them into three categories depending on what he sees as the primary theme of Jesus' lesson in each of them. The one that we're looking at today, the parable of the Good Samaritan, is, in Capon's opinion, a parable of grace. It's a story that primarily reveals something about God's grace to us. So this morning, as we make our way into this parable and into the exchange with Jesus that prompted it, let's pay attention together for what the Holy Spirit might want to show us about God's grace today. Now, grace is a word we use a lot in the church. But there's lots of different ways of thinking about it. There are lots of common definitions. You've probably heard some of them. I think maybe the one I've heard the most often is that grace is the unmerited favor of God. More colloquially, sometimes we say grace is not getting what you deserve. Grace is the merciful kindness of God that actually turns us to Christ. I really like that one. It's almost as good as the one that has really stuck with me over about the last year. Grace is the movement of God towards us. Isn't that an interesting image? Think of all the ways that God moves, and particularly how God moves to come closer to us. If that definition is accurate, then all of those ways that we see God moving actually reveal grace to us in all of its beauty. So with that definition, we can now look at this passage and ask, what does it show us about how God moves towards us? What does it show us about grace? So hold on to that as we listen. The whole thing starts with a lawyer, an expert in Jewish religious law. Remember, in Israel, law and religion, one thing. Luke seems to have been under the impression that this fellow was trying to test Jesus. And by test, we usually mean set him up, even possibly expose him as a fake. It would be a bit like if there were, and I hope there's not, a theology professor sitting in here this morning who stood up in the middle of the sermon and said, yes, but Diane, explain to us the heart of the gospel of Christ. It would be a bit like that, except that we're all clear I'm not Jesus, right? But you get what I mean. This fellow's questions may not have been entirely sincere. Jesus, being the good rabbi that he is, employs a classic rabbinic teaching method. He turns things back on the lawyer and answers him with a question of his own. He says, well, what's written in the law? How do you read it? I think that there's probably a genetic thing in Jewish rabbis that makes them brilliant at this. It's a great way to teach because you challenge the person to do their own thinking rather than just absorb yours. Well, on this occasion, we see how Jesus uses this method to turn what was meant to be a test for him into a lesson for the lawyer. The fellow proves his theological credentials. He answers by saying the two greatest commandments, saying we're to love God and to love others. That's the way to life with God. And Jesus gives him a proverbial attaboy. He says, you've answered correctly. Do these things and you will live. Here's where it gets interesting. For some reason, the lawyer can't leave it at that. Luke tells us he wanted to justify himself. Maybe his ego kind of got the best of him and he wanted to try to impress Jesus. Or even more, maybe he wanted to try to push Jesus into making a mistake. Jesus had affirmed that the way that we discover life is by loving God and by loving our neighbors, but the lawyer can't leave it at that. So he asks Jesus, yeah, but who's my neighbor? He asks the classic question you ask when you want to pick a theological fight. He asks the interpretation question. It gets you in trouble every time. Yeah, but how do you interpret neighbor? He's trying to trap Jesus into wandering into these complex Jewish religious laws that had multiple interpretations depending on which school and which rabbi you'd learned under. But Jesus does it again. He turns the table. Instead of answering with his own preferred interpretation, he responds by asking the lawyer another question. But this time it's a question with quite a long lead up. It's prefaced with this parable we've just heard, which is arguably one of Jesus' most famous, the parable of the Good Samaritan. I suspect most of you know it well. Even if you've never spent much time in church, you probably have some familiarity with it. The word Samaritan has crept into common parlance. A man's traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. It's about a 17-mile stretch, very dangerous part of the road. And he gets attacked and he's beaten and he's left for dead. Three people come along. The first is a Jewish priest who avoids contact with the fellow. He crosses to the other side of the road and he walks on. He doesn't stop to help. The second person along is a Levite. He's a guy whose job was actually to help the priests in the temple. And he does the same thing as the priest did. He crosses the road to the other side and walks by, not stopping to help. The third man along is a man from Samaria. Now you need to know that in general, Jewish people hated Samaritans. There was a long history of animosity between them that sometimes escalated to the point of violence. And that's exactly why Jesus made the third passerby in his parable a Samaritan. He was being confrontational, something he often did in parables, actually. So the third man comes along, the Samaritan, and he sees the beaten man, and he takes pity on him, and he comes to his aid. He tends his wounds, and he takes him to an inn where he can recover. Jesus has created this character in his story, a character that he knew that the Jewish lawyer would hate. And he's made him the hero of the story. And only then does he respond to the lawyer's question about who constitutes his neighbor. And he responds with a pointed question of his own. He says to the lawyer, well, which of those three men do you think was a neighbor to the man who had been beaten? And just like that, the lawyer is cornered. He can't quite bring himself to say the Samaritan was his neighbor. The sting of Jesus' story is fairly fresh. Remember, we don't like Samaritans. But he does concede that the neighbor was the one who showed the guy mercy. You can kind of imagine him spitting that out between gritted teeth. Jesus had dared to suggest that an unfaithful Samaritan, might have done a better job of living out one of God's two greatest commandments, the one to love a neighbor, than those two devout Jewish religious men had. Lessons like these did not help Jesus to win friends with the Jewish religious authorities. As with all of Jesus' teachings, there are layers and layers of lessons for us to discover in this parable. But for today, We're thinking about this as a parable of grace. And so I want us to explore three things that this story shows us about grace. The first is that every single one of us needs grace. Sometimes, like the man in the story, we know it. We really know it. We're in trouble. We need God's help, and we need it now. Other times, though, we might be more like the priest or the Levite. We've got it covered. We're good with God. We're faithful people. We're living our lives. We're certain that we've got this faith thing figured out. Others may need grace, but we've kind of come past that now, and we're good. That was actually the perspective of the lawyer, I think, who was challenging Jesus with all those questions. Remember, Luke told him us that he's trying to justify himself. He's trying to prove to Jesus that he has got God's ways and God's laws all figured out. Well, just like the priest and the Levite in the parable, in his mind, he thinks he's good with God. So good that he actually doesn't really need God's help anymore. Isn't it interesting? Think about it. This guy's actually standing, quite literally, face to face with the one who embodied God's grace completely. And he can't even see it. Simply because he doesn't think he needs it. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? But it happened all the time with Jesus. In reality, though, even with all of his theological training, pay attention to this when you're thinking about people like me, he needs God's grace as much as anyone else. That's part of why Jesus told him this parable. We all need grace, whether we always remember that or not. We all need it each and every day because it is the movement of God towards us that brings us more fully into wholeness. And into life, the life God intends for us. Grace brings life to all of us, and we all need it in some form. So that's the first thing I think we see clearly. The second is this, and it's good news. God extends his grace to us in many ways, the most frequent of which is actually through other people. We can have amazing one-on-one sacred moments with God, moments where the Holy Spirit just bathes us in a sense of God's love, and those are precious. But they're not that common for most of us. More often, what tends to happen is that we experience God's love and God's grace as it comes to us through others who share it freely with us. When people love you, is that them loving you or is it God loving you? You ever wondered about that? I think the answer is yes. Remember what John wrote in his letter. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. It doesn't have to be either God or the person loving you. It can very well be both, God loving you through that person. So often God's grace comes to us actually through someone else. It's embodied. And as that Jewish lawyer learned from Jesus' parable, sometimes God extends his grace to us through the darndest of people. Sometimes God moves towards us and loves us through people we least expect it from. I want to share with you a story about this from our lives. On Simon's mom's side, some of you know this, most of our family are from, and many of them still live, in Belfast, Northern Ireland, a place with a long history of religious conflict between Protestants and Roman Catholics. Simon's family are of the Protestant persuasion. His grandparents were particularly devout Christians with deep, deep faith. They really gave our family the roots of our faith. I actually believe that in a large part, I stand here today as a follower of Jesus because of their faithful prayers over the years for all of their family, including prayers that they said for years before I paid any attention to Jesus, for Simon and I and our children. They were faithful people who bore their own scars from having lived through the pain and trauma of all those years of the troubles in Northern Ireland. When Simon's granddad died 20 years ago, he went very suddenly. He was working at his job as a school crossing guard outside an elementary school. And he got all of the children safely in for the start of the school day, and then he collapsed on the sidewalk at his post. The first person to his side that morning, the person who stayed with him until the ambulance took him away, was a Roman Catholic priest. I need to say that Simon's family are all incredibly grateful for that man's presence there that day and for all that he did. But I also know that there may be some people in Belfast for whom the pain is too acute, so they would struggle with that if it had been their loved one. But there it is. God's movement towards us. God's grace comes so very often through the kindness and the love of others, even others we might not expect it from. So, first, the parable shows us we all need grace. And second, it shows us that that grace comes to us through others. My final observation this morning flows quite naturally from those first two. If we receive the grace that we need through others, then it must mean that others can receive the grace that they need through us. How about that? You might be the way that God moves towards someone to bring them to life and wholeness. You might be the answer to their prayer. God might share his love with someone through you today. It's amazing when you think about it, really. It's how grace works. It's how God set this all up. Grace is not just a one-way movement towards us. It's meant to be a continual movement, a rhythm that flows through others towards us, and then through us towards others, and on and on and on. And these others, the ones that we share God's love with, they might be across the street, or across town, or they might even be around the world. Sometimes when we were preparing for our mission trips to Mexico, we would have people wonder why we needed to travel so far to help people in need. Couldn't we just stay here and do something useful here? I used to say that it kind of wasn't either or in my estimation. It wasn't here or there, it was both. Well, a dear friend of mine had a better response than mine, I think. A response that actually sounds a little bit more like it might have actually come from Jesus. She used to explain that Jesus calls us to love our neighbors. And the person who was challenging her would usually suggest that the Mexican families that we were about to go and build homes for really weren't our neighbors. They were somebody else's neighbors, but not ours, way up here in Canada. She'd smile. She's a gentle soul. She'd gently say, "No? Well, I think they are. But then I guess it really just depends on how big you think your backyard is." Well, I don't know about you, but as time goes by, I'm starting to feel more and more like my backyard is pretty big. You know, if there's an upside to what we see happening with our climate in this world, it may be that it is forcing us to recognize that how I live here has an impact on my neighbors around the world, for better or for worse. And what they do has an impact on me. We are all in this together, whether we like it or not. So yes, We absolutely watch for ways we can extend love and kindness to our neighbors here at home. But we also remember that we have neighbors in Africa, in India, in Southeast Asia. And we might be wise to consider how we can be intentional about loving them as well. That's what Jesus means when he calls us to be like that Samaritan man, to be willing to see the other as my neighbor, willing to go across the street to love him. It's why he urged that lawyer to be less worried about who qualified as his neighbor and more concerned with who he could be a neighbor to. Well, as we take the time to notice those around us and we watch for how we might extend love and kindness to them, God actually works through us to make that movement towards them, a movement of grace. And when we, like that Roman Catholic priest in Belfast 20 years ago, when we are willing to be part of that movement of grace in that person's life, when we're willing to cross the street to help the one who is in need, then God is able to share his love, his life-giving, healing, restoring love through us. Amen.